This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 232. Beep boop. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful, semi-warm, beautiful, sunny sky Friday with my co-host and friend Michael Martin to talk about games at work.
Dot biz.
How are you doing, Michael?
Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm happy to be here. My voice is a little bit better this time around, although not all the way home.
Well, that's because there's still some stuff going on this month.
Well, there is, and part of the stuff, unfortunately, is fighting off colds or whatever, and before long, we're going to have pollen season. Hooray!
Oh, you know, my watch yesterday warned me that today is going to be a high pollen day.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And is it?
I haven't been outside yet.
Yeah, and for those of you not in North Carolina, when we talk about high pollen days here, this is when your car takes on a new shade of yellow because or green, depends on which pollen you actually get. But your car, you will know it, and you can write "wash me" on your car because there's so much.
Yes.
Big feature about us here in North Carolina. But let's talk about some features, starting with those from Google. Couple of intriguing articles these days around Google's forays into games and gameplay via something called Stadia. So I was just learning a little bit about this. I think I heard it on a couple of channels. And the first thing that struck me was like, okay, because I don't think about Google for gameplay. And I think about Steam and the hosted and supported, you know, structure around that. I think about what we've learned about Butterfly.net over years past. And it's hard to see about what games are actually going to be on Stadia as a platform to allow you to enjoy them on all your various and sundry devices. So what did you take away from these announcements and where the structure is going to be?
Well, I actually am really excited about the possibilities of Stadia because if you think about it, and you may not have been that actively engaged in this space, but back in 2007, 2008, when I was doing the startup, we were looking at how could you provide high fidelity, high resolution virtual environments to businesses over the existing, you know, pipe, so to speak, right. And the fact that most business users did not have high-end PCs with massive 3D graphics cards in them and just fantastic high-resolution monitors. And so there were a couple of companies back then that would virtualize an entire PC and then try to push via streaming the output of that PC to your desktop and so that you could experience the high-fidelity, high-powered environment without having to have necessarily a high-powered environment on your end. One of the big challenges was network capacity, server position in response to where you are. So latency was a big issue. And a matter of fact, we actually had done some work with one of the virtual worlds, and out on YouTube, there's a video of me showing a demonstration of this from back then where I had my Palm Trio phone controlling a virtual world in real time, even though there was no way that the Palm Trio could run that virtual world on it. And so what 10 years later, effectively, we now have the capability to not only virtualize those high graphic workloads, thanks to all the investment around blockchain mining, the power of GPUs, the power of virtualization and containerization, the ability to architect these global networks. And Google, with their presence in all the geographies, has moved those server farms closer and closer to reduce latency. On top of that, you now have just look at in the last 10 years how far YouTube has gone. That's streaming video, and it's interactive to some degree. And I've actually, you know, done stuff where videos that I've put out, you can have clickable links and other things. But we now have the idea that you could watch a streaming gaming channel and with a click of the button, launch that game yourself. That's where I think this gets really interesting and could open up whole new areas of potential revenue for Google and the gaming industry.
Well, so what you just said makes a ton of sense. Also makes a great sense for why we're talking about it on this podcast. One of the things that you just mentioned that got me kind of enthusiastic too is that when you're watching, we talked about Ninja as one example on Twitch about how the games that Ninja is playing, you know, might be. Wouldn't it be intriguing to not just be able to launch a version of that game while you're watching YouTube or Twitch or something like that, but actually get into the game and be able to jump right in?
Exactly. Right, that's the exact model, right? You're watching a live stream of,
and you participate.
And then you jump in and become a participant, right? I mean, that's exactly where this could eventually go to. And again, the infrastructure is there. With YouTube and Twitch and other services, the infrastructure is there with YouTube Red or whatever they call it, paid YouTube, right? So there's now monetization built in, not just ads, but the ability to throw your credit card down and purchase something. So you could say, hey, I want to spend the next 3 hours playing this first person shooter with the people on the Twitch stream or on the YouTube gaming stream.
Or I want that armor and I'm willing to throw down some money to get it. I don't want to craft it. I don't want to grind it. I just want it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, and what's really funny, Google made this announcement.
Right.
And this announcement is, hey, look at this thing that we're doing, but they actually didn't show a lot of real, you know, what's the business model? What's the this? What's the that? They showed, you know, some screenshots and a couple other things. And I unfortunately haven't had a chance to spend an hour and a half of my time watching the video of it, of the announcement itself. But from everything I've read, they didn't go deep into it actually doing it. There have been some bloggers and other people who've tested it and have just been blown away. So sounds like it's probably pretty good. And I think the most exciting part here is, one, I think this is a pre-announcement from Google to kind of take the steam out of Microsoft's upcoming streaming gaming service announcement, to take the steam out of the rumored Apple gaming subscription service. There's this other company, I think they do something called Steam.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
Right. Which has been very successful in providing a platform for people to resell older games and some new games too, to sell those directly. But it requires a significant investment by the game developers to rewrite their applications to run on Steam. With this, does not appear to require a total rewrite or even a partial rewrite to get your game on the platform.
Yeah, and that is another exciting thing too, because you can hit more users faster by just spinning up a virtual instance versus saying, oh, you need to have a PC with these minimum requirements in order to play this game. Like, no, I don't.
Yep.
So what if as a user, I have those older games, you know, I've got the CDs or I've got the cartridges for my console or I've got, you know, what have you. Wouldn't it be kind of cool to be able to play my games up in this gaming cloud and just say, I would like to now play this game on my huge oops, sorry, TV, and be able to enjoy it there as opposed to my rinky dinky, you know, 17 inch laptop or the rinky dinky, you know, 40 inch monitor of my.
Yeah, I don't want it on that crappy little 40 inch monitor that I have on my desk. I want it on the 80 inch TV screen.
Yeah. So,
one
of the things I saw was the handheld controller that looks like it's an integral part of this experience too. So this is the physical component of Stadia that it looks like Google is selling. And I guess I focused maybe too much on that there's a controller just like you have an Xbox controller or PlayStation or whatever. But that feels like another aspect of, okay, now the controller theoretically could have its own IP address, so it doesn't need to be connected to a console or even to your TV. It could be just something that's just another Internet of Things thing that lets you interact with what's happening on the web somewhere else.
And that could be a way that they cut down some of the latency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually completely ignored the controller because I don't like game pads. I'm a keyboard mouse gamer.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
So it's funny how we both look at this slightly different.
Well, that's part of the reason why we're doing a show. Otherwise, woo-hoo, be like, oh, you know, why not? Yeah. So really, really cool.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited about this. I think it really opens up kind of a vision that I saw years ago, and may make it so much easier for game developers to reach a larger and larger audience with their games. It really depends on the monetization model when they're done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, what didn't leap into my consciousness in the beginning was the whole idea too of being able to share your gameplay and how important that is, right? So this creates all of these content creators for Twitch, YouTube, etc., to allow you to share, hey, come watch me doing my thing.
Yeah.
And that now creates more content that can be served up by Google as well.
So by the way, we mentioned Steam in this discussion and how, oh, you know, yeah, old games had to be kind of rewritten to run on Steam. I saw an article about an old game that is being rewritten by a group of fans using the Unreal Engine.
That's unreal.
That's just freaking unreal. And that game is one that I remember playing, and I still have the CD in the house somewhere. I guess it's a DVD, not a CD. No, I think it is a CD. I don't think it's a DVD. It's that old. I think it's like 94. maybe even earlier. Star Wars Dark Forces. So this game, I don't believe you played it, so I'll mm-hmm. I'll kind of ramble a bit. This yeah. game was using the Doom / Quake engine. I guess Quake was the one that got you multi-levels because Doom originally started as kind of 2.5D, right?
Right.
And this one you could actually go up ramps and things, where you play it's a first-person shooter, and you play a character in between some of the Star Wars movies, and you become Force-sensitive, I think, in the second version, or was it the end of the first one? Because there's Dark Forces and Dark Forces 2. but did you ever play any of the Quake games?
Hardly.
Okay. Okay.
Wasn't my speed, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm not a first person shooter person at all, but I'm a big Star Wars geek, and this just did it really, really well. And you're I'm trying to remember the whole story behind it. Can't remember if you're a mercenary or something like that, and you uncover this group of advanced stormtroopers, and you're in this kind of Moss, I think it is in Moss Eisley to start with, and then there's other areas. And it's just, you know, a typical kind of Doom / Quake type environment. But the art was from 94, 95 mm-hmm. quality art with that level of graphics. And they have completely started rebuilding this using the Unreal 4 engine. And it is phenomenal. It is phenomenal. And
it's pretty good.
I just have to say, spend some time, watch the video. The amount of detail that an individual has done with just building out an environment is just phenomenal. I'm sorry. I don't know how to say it better than that. I am. It's one of those ones. It's like, I love the game. Right. So, and it has good memories from playing it the first time that I'm going to have to download it. And I just discovered there's a 7.4 gig level download to where you can actually play through the level yourself. So,
wow. Good. Sounds like I know what you're going to spend your weekend doing.
Now, I've got a show I'm doing next week, and I'm rehearsing all weekend long.
There's a show. There's a show. So if you weren't going to be spending your time on the show, you might want to be spending some time in VR, right?
Maybe, or AR.
Or
mixed reality.
Mixed reality. Some sort of reality thing here.
You know, if I wasn't doing a show, I might want to live in some kind of reality.
Really?
Reality. Really reality.
Real reality or just fake reality?
Yeah.
In real life?
Exactly.
In real reality? So there's a fun article you found here about the new Oculus Rift S that's supposedly arriving in spring, and now it's spring, so that's good, for the low price of $399. So we're starting to get into consumer price points on VR stuff.
Yes, we are.
I'm curious to know what else struck you about this, because I had a couple of things that kind of popped to mind for me. But when you looked at this and the setup, what did you think?
Well, the biggest thing about this is, yes, it's in the consumer price range now for $399. Mm-hmm. But I think that the trade-offs that they made to get it there will make it a much worse experience. So they increase the resolution to 1280 by 1440 per eye, right, which is great.
Which is not a big update.
But that's good resolution. It's not bad resolution. But they dropped the frame rates down to 80 hertz from 90 hertz. And even 90 hertz is not a great frame rate, because I think you need like 120 or greater to keep people from getting motion sickness.
Oops.
And eye tiredness when you're in a VR world, right? And so I'm really worried that they've brought the price down in order to make it much more consumable by people, but they're going to give them an experience which will turn them off from VR. That's why this article was so important to me. Cheaper headphones. Well, you could plug in decent headphones, maybe. I don't know how it works as well with that. But I think the biggest issue is the frame rate and the implications of that for people who might get motion sickness or might have that dizziness that they get if they're in VR too long. I think this will make it worse.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. So the couple things hit me. So I was looking at the spec sheet to look at what the differences were from the prior version. So struck me as a more expensive, always feels a little bit in the wrong direction, because we're not yet in the space. So another 40-50 bucks to get you a few better things, but nothing like super better, was the first piece for me. And the second was, I'm still really solidly parked on the idea that AR is the way to go, and you can do much in VR and you've got more control, and we're not as sophisticated and ready to move in that direction yet. But if I were looking at my own, where I would want to take and invest my own personal consumer level dollars, it would be in the AR space, even though those are not as sophisticated in the end for all of this. Something that I thought was really intriguing, and I'm wondering how this all works, are the cameras.
Yeah.
So this might is the key word, an AR, VR, mixed reality kind of experience, because you might be able to see through those cameras into the real reality. and then have the virtual aspect of it superimposed on top of it. So I thought that was kind of cool, because when you look at the picture, the splash page of the device itself, it looks like you've got stereoscopic vision right at the beginning and the front, and there's also additional cameras off to the side that might help eat more. So that's kind of what grabbed me.
Yeah, that's a good perspective, and perhaps it will provide that. If it gives the AR aspect to where you have the cameras showing the real world, and they're only putting the VR / AR overlays on part of the screen, mm-hmm. that may make up for the refresh issue. And reduce that kind of motion sickness.
Do you also see the cable that's on it, but in both pictures? Because it looks like you would have to plug this in, and it's not a wireless design. So you're gonna have a cable draping off the side of your head.
Oh yeah, this is plug it into your PC.
Yeah.
Which is why I think it's more VR than AR, because if you're plugged into your PC, you're not moving around.
You're tethered, and. Yeah. And tethering has its own, you know, fun around it.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You saying that? I'm saying that.
That's what I'm saying. So something that's a bit untethered, would be being on an island of pigs and throwing stuff at them and knocking them out. So there's an AR Rovio example coming to iOS devices. It says in late spring, so we're in early spring right now, so it would not be today. But it's exciting because this ought to be taking advantage of like the slingshot experience we were talking about just last week, Michael, and doing it Angry Birds style.
Well, it's funny. So I've already signed up for the pre-order because it looks like the pre-order is free. At least there's no pricing attached to it yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
And when I actually looked at the gameplay video of it, it looks almost exactly like the Swift Shot game from WWDC last year, which I have installed on my iPhone. And one day you and I will be in the same location again, and we'll have to play it.
Yeah.
Because all that is you have a slingshot, and you're trying to knock over blocks and things that get in the way from you knocking over the slingshot from the other player. And mm-hmm. you have three of them, and if you knock over all three of the other players, you win. And so if you think about Angry Birds, you've got three shots or a few more or less, depending on the level, and you're trying to knock out all the pigs, right?
Yep.
So what they do is they enhance the Swift Shot. Here's my mental model, right? They've enhanced Swift Shot to include the different physics based off of the type of bird, as well as the different physics of the materials, right? Some of them is wood, some of them are ice, right? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And the explosions of hitting the little boxes of TNT. So,
you know, you could do some fun haptic stuff with that too, where your watch would vibrate, you know, as the TNT explodes and destroys the ice embalmed birds, or you know, stuff like that. And you know, what this reminded me of a little bit was, remember when the Wii first came out, that they had to quickly give people wrist straps
to make sure
that
they weren't throwing it at the TV
Wii remote the Wiimote at the TV. I kind of wonder how quickly there will need to be Apple wrist straps or phones that
and if you play it a lot, you would become wrist strong.
Maybe so.
Yes. Yes, we did do a Colbert reference there.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait. Gosh, surprise, surprise, right? All right. Well, moving from a Colbert back to Star Wars once more, we've got a fun article that I came across, and I've actually seen a couple of versions of this.
Yeah.
The title already is clickbait just to begin with. But I think it's intriguing how there is robotics in terms of drone planes, as well as robotic AI that is becoming integrated in with military fighter pilots. And the name that has been called here is Skyborg. and they compare it to everyone's favorite astromech, R2-D2, that would be the co-pilot, if you will, to the human pilot in a plane to do what it needs to do. So another case of science fiction becoming reality, and the Star Trek communicator turning into the flip phone, cell phone of the early 1980s, and back again with the new Motorola Razr, in case you have some money burning a hole in your pocket and you want to go and get a flip phone that way too. I thought it was really intriguing to have the onboard AI in a fighter jet that collaborates with the human, and that gives another sense of awareness, gives a sense of a wingman who's taking direction and cues from the fighter pilot themselves, and moving in the direction of having astromechs being part of every vehicle. This particular article goes, you know, slightly in a darker perspective in terms of AI in warfare. So
it's target recognition.
Yeah, I'm constraining my comments a little bit more towards the navigation aspects and repair and so on and so forth. But it's that's where I was going with this. And you said, Michael, you'd seen this as well. Did you spend more time on the target recognition side, or
I think that's going to be the main purpose of it, right? I mean, and the thing is, while you're right, it's 100% clickbait addressable. Because they talk about an AI, they don't actually talk about a mech sitting on the plane of any kind. They talk about an onboard AI. Well, modern warcraft have you know, AIs built into them now. Target recognition is a very difficult and potentially politically error-prone problem. I mean, you shoot down the wrong type of plane, and you've now caused not just a military incident, but a civil incident, a political incident, etc. And we've seen that historically in the last 20 years of fighters shooting down civilian planes. That's a big, big problem. I do agree with you. I think the augmentation of the fighter pilot to improve safety, to improve reliability, are all key things that an onboard AI can handle. And even the examples that they show visually in the article, nothing is a mech, right? It's an article about AI. And to that purpose, this is happening, it's been happening, and it's getting better. So I think that's very appropriate. From the standpoint of a technology perspective, and I think you hit it just right on the fact that this is augmenting the pilot, not replacing the pilot.
Right.
Right? And I think that's probably the most appropriate use at this point in time in this space.
So I know that we didn't have this in the pre-show, but let me share this article here too, because this is something that I heard about on the radio yesterday or the day before, where Volvo is now planning on putting cameras in their cars. So when you think about AI in vehicles and you think about safety, like you were just mentioning, Michael, there's a lot of things that could be done in the case of autonomous vehicles, keeping an eye out, so to speak, a camera out for distracted driving, and to help the driver get where they need to go safely because of a whole range of things. But the nifty neato part of all this is, well, what's going to happen when now the systems on the car are taking on board so many more capabilities that there could be ramifications there that said, okay, well, the vehicle manufacturer should have been able to prevent this terrible, awful accident from happening.
Well,
right.
Yes. As the saying goes. I think taking on more responsibility to allow the driver to focus on those things that are appropriate, right? Think about 100 years ago. You as the driver were worried about things like water in the radiator on every drive.
Yeah.
Right? We don't worry about that anymore. There are systems on board the vehicle that say, hey, your coolant is low, and they mm-hmm. give you plenty of warning about that. 50 years ago, you as a driver had to worry about, is it going to rain on this trip? Because windshield wipers were not a common thing on all vehicles, right? Yep. There are systems in place now that address that. So it's, I think, important that we look at those, the current advances around driver augmentation as what they are, ultimately getting us to self-driving cars, and then you won't have to worry about the driving part either, right?
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
you'll be able to do more in the vehicle that's more appropriate for you as a human, right? I find this fascinating, yep. And there's lots of different ethical thoughts to go through, and responsible, the ultimate ethical dilemma. Left, you kill a busload full of kids. Right, you run over a lady in a baby carriage. And straight, you go off a cliff. What should the self-driving car do?
Yeah.
Right?
And what should the car do that's taking control away from the driver? The example on the radio show yesterday was, okay, you need to get to the hospital fast. So you're probably doing things that an onboard AI might interpret as distracted driving or speeding in situations, that the AI, the car, might say, oh, I can't do that.
Yes, but, a well-designed system, you would have an emergency button mode, and it would use vehicle-to-vehicle communications to let other cars know that your car is in an emergency situation and needs to go faster or go through unsafe intersections. But because the systems are all talking together, you could do it at a safe speed without causing other people to die.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Intriguing on so many different ways that we don't have time to go into right now, do we?
No.
All right. Well, there was one last thing I know you were intrigued about, and that you have already said, yes, I need this. And those are things that you put in your ears, right?
Yes. I bought a new box of Q-tips.
What, wasn't the Babelfish?
No, Apple is doing an event on Monday that appears to be about services, media services, whatever, right? I'm not going to speculate until it happens because mm-hmm. I've already done the speculation and I'm past it. But this week they've been dumping a lot of hardware announcements in the news, and one of them is the AirPod 2 has been announced. I've loved my AirPods since they were initially announced. I got them almost immediately upon announcement. I've been using them daily for well over 2 years now. They're just fantastic. The new ones are supposed to be faster as it relates to pairing between devices and transferring between devices. That's one thing that does kind of drive me a little nuts, that extra 2 seconds I have to wait between switching from my phone to my iPad with the AirPods. Those 2 seconds, they add up.
Just think about what you would do with all those
2 seconds. With all those 2 seconds. They're enabling the Hello Siri command as something you can do without tapping your AirPods, which people go, well, you got all these other devices, you don't need that. But what this really does, which I find more interesting, right now you can program each bud to do one additional command. So you double tap on one and it's Hello Siri, and you double tap on the other and it's, pause your music or mm-hmm. start your music. Well, I've just freed one of those up. So now I have three commands. I can say, hello, Siri, out loud. Or I can tap my left button and do something, and I tap my right button and do something. So it's adding functionality there. More efficiency on the battery for talk time. And when I do WebExes at work, I tend not to use the AirPods because WebEx has been draining the batteries of mine. So I'm hoping that will have a very positive effect on my use of them for WebExes and stuff. So really looking forward to it. Ordered them on day of announce. They should get here in about a week and a half.
Hooray. So, I can't wait to see how they work for you and kind of get your firsthand impressions.
Well, they'll look like cigarettes sticking out of my ears. Just like version one.
Just like
version. Oh, and they do Qi charging, which I'm looking forward to that too. Now that I've got a Qi charger for my phone, I'm like, wow, how did I live with all those things plugging into things and charging? That's just so barbaric.
You know, I saw a commercial for a Samsung device where I thought, is like, how incredible is that, where you could have one device charge another?
Yeah.
Right? You know, kind of hobo off like that. I thought that was pretty slick too.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Your phone's about to die. Here, take some of my energy.
Take mine.
Don't go on without me.
Exactly. Love it.
Yeah. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
All right. Well, we are definitely at time for this week. So we hope that you enjoyed this show, talking about bots, talking about boops and beeps and things you put on your eyes and in your ears and everywhere else. And, well, maybe not everywhere else, but, you know, we hope you enjoyed the show.
Smell-o-vision.
Tell us what you're interested in. Give us your perspective. And you know how to find us. We're on all the stuff and the stuff with the stuff. So
cool.
Looking forward to hearing from you next time on
Geeks at Work.
Got this.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.